Yeah, good morning. Thank you very much for the invitation here to talk a little bit about storage. Actually, I called this talking storage to say not just talking about storage itself, but also talking about the language storage. Or I think there's at least a dialect of people being or working in storage. So that's hopefully what gets out of my talk here. As my background, I worked for 20 years in research and developing for storage products, software products, hardware products. Meanwhile, I'm working as a professor at the Hochschule Darmstadt, an English University of Applied Sciences in Darmstadt. It's a nice university with 13,000 students, 11 faculties, and we have our faculty, information science faculty, has about 1,500 students, which is one of the largest faculties for universities of applied sciences in Germany. We are a team of 55 professors and employees in this faculty and offering different courses, the classical bachelor and master scheme. So we moved completely from the diploma courses to the new model. We also have, for instance, cooperative courses, where the students are working for companies already and doing their studies at our universities. We also have master programs, international master programs, and PhD programs. And there are quite some teams doing research as well in our faculty with a strong focus on embedded systems. And there's also a big team focusing on card technologies for, for multimedia systems in cars, which is quite interesting area. And therefore, the strongest focus is really on system-oriented technologies, more low-level technologies, which we are developing. Our faculty itself also has a really good ranking. Yeah? If you're interested in studies, it's a good place to study. For instance, the newspaper Wirtschaftswoche just gave us the second place in Germany for University of Applied Sciences. We also have a lot of international partners. We are working with other universities, and Darmstadt itself as a town is also very nice if you want to visit that. It's called the Center of Jugendstil, meaning that there was a, in the beginning of the 20th century, was a group of artists which founded a community, built some nice houses, and there's other places to visit. So that's for my background, for the university I'm working for. Coming to the topic on talking storage, it sometimes seems, if you hear to the specialists, to the experts, that they are using different languages. You know? It's sometimes also there's a confusion of tongues between them, something like in the Babylonic times, where people don't really understand. And this is quite typical if you have science or an industry, that there are different groups being formed. And I found the picture very interesting. You may know this world, which were created in Dubai, with all of the small islands which build the continents. And if you found such a continent, it's typical that you spread out teams and they adopt their own language, or at least their own dialect, that they are understanding themselves, that they are the communities. But it's hard to understand the others because they are using some different words or the same words for different things. And this makes it difficult, you know, to understand the other groups. So that's why I want to go a little bit into the details of storage, what people you can find there, just a few. There's not enough time to look into all different kind of people you can find here. For the information science itself, it's a pretty new science. You all know that the IT industry is not so old. Sometimes students ask, how old is this really? And in Germany, we have the luck that a person called Karl Steinbuch, a professor in Karlsruhe, really wrote an article where he introduced the first time the word informatik, yeah, which is the German word for information science. So we have this now for 55 years. That's how old the whole industry is, at least since it has a name. Yeah? I think it's a comparable time frame in the English-speaking world as well. And since then, in 55 years, we have created many of these islands. If you look on these islands, it's not only that they're wonderful places people are building, there's also strong competition, so each company or all companies want to be the winner, want to have this wonderful island in the middle and have the other ones not being in the middle and not being so successful. So it's not only that these languages or dialects are created because it's nice to talk with other people and understand them very well, it's also to form your ecosystem as a company, to be successful in the competition, attract your customers, let them learn your language, that is harder for them to understand others. And I think that's also some aspect that needs to be recognized, that this is not just a game, but also there's a winner at the end, because this game is competitive. So what is storage? If we ask about that, and I mainly mean with storage, the storage business. The storage industry, what is this about? If you look for a definition, it's hard to find. I would call it, it's the industry around non-volatile storage devices. So everything that stores data permanently, distinguishing that from memory or other stuff, which have their own market. It started with the good old punch cards more than 100 years ago. Then right at the beginning of the IT industry, it started with hard disk drives and tapes. You may remember the good old floppy disks, which were eliminated meanwhile, not longer being used. And the storage industry, they created their own world of storage controllers, storage area networks, very specific devices, well-fitting for storage purposes. We also can find automated tape libraries, very big tape libraries with millions of cartridges inside. Optical and magnetic or optical storage are devices you can buy mainly for archival purposes. Solid-state disks is a newer form of storing data somewhere. In total, it's something like a $20 to $25 billion market. Depends on whom you ask and what he is actually counting, but the typical analyst would say it's a business like these, so a pretty big business. And it's mainly driven by hardware-centric business models. That means that you usually count boxes being shipped. The devices, storage controllers, your storage boxes that you are shipping, this is what you count, this is how you create your business model. And your sales force is oriented on shipping boxes. Boxes are shipped with microcode, which is an interesting term to hear, that you use such a small code. We will hear a little bit more later. You also find boxes shipped with complex system hardware, with newer concepts, which where people are thinking more of the software part of the boxes, but it's also sold as boxes. And for sure, there's also a software portion out of the business, the storage software. It creates something like $3.5 billion in revenue, which is something like 15%. That means the rest is all hardware business, even though there's a lot of software inside the boxes. So that's what the storage business is today. And if you want to look a little bit more deeper into the storage markets, and if you put the analyst's glasses on, what you typically do is you split the market in segments. And that's what I've done here. You split the market in the different device types you find and in the cost or the class of this device, where you start with the entry-level device, which is low-cost devices, something up to $10,000. Then you come to the mid-range, where bigger devices, more robust devices are being sold. It depends on whom you ask, where how this range is. Analysts also have the tendency to create more segments, or you can also find up to 10 different levels. But I think it's more easy just to have three here to distinguish the different sectors. So there's mid-range, and then there's the high-end market, the enterprise market, where you typically buy boxes for more than $1 million of dollars. Yeah? So really expensive boxes. In the classical view, what we learned, what we have as storage technologies, there's tape and there's disk. Yeah? Tape for permanent storage, where you don't need any power to store data. Block is the classical hard disk device underneath, which you serve out as blocks for your external interfaces. And these are still big markets. Yeah? Both of them, for the instance, the enterprise market, you have lots of boxes being shipped, mainly in the mainframe world, which is still a very vital business, not a growing business, but a very vital business, where you have your classical sales cycle of 3-4 years and shipping new boxes to the customers, really expensive boxes. For mid-range, that's growing market, especially for disk, where you ship more disk each year. And that's pretty much the classical stuff. Classical means if you look back 20 years. Since then, we have seen 20 years ago the first NAS devices, and a new market were created for NAS devices, which started as NAS boxes. Yeah? And typically, you rank this as mid-range file, yeah, mid-range NAS boxes, if you compare with the mid-range disk boxes. Yeah? There were also a new sector or segment being created 10 years ago for scale-out technologies, because mid-range wasn't sufficient anymore for capacity-wise. You wanted to store more and more data, want to build bigger boxes. So the scale-out market were introduced. Having more controllers in there, it's also introduced the active-active schema, meaning that all controllers are active and can take the operation from other controllers, why they also serve the same data out of it. If you compare the left side and the right side, you see there is no enterprise segment above the scale-out NAS. And I think that's something some people are asking, whether there's enterprise NAS. Do we need something like this? From an analyst's point of view, this means you would typically have to buy a box where your gigabyte is 10 times more expensive than for the classical NAS box. And I doubt that there is really a market in this area for that.
Yeah? May I ask a question?
Yeah.
So I notice you've got mid-range and scale-up NAS. What about the really low-end consumer-grade NAS?
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah, the big question mark underneath. I will come to this.
Okay.
A couple of years ago, some people thought it's good to have block and file served out of the same boxes, so they called this unified. You will also find unified storage now in the mid-range, and some companies also claim to have bigger boxes serving out unified storage. Yeah. So these are also segments analysts count. And on the right-hand side, you see this cloud. We heard from John already. That's really important. More and more people are moving that. From a storage market perspective, it's a good question what cloud really means, because you are selling boxes to cloud providers, which provide the cloud. For you, it's a hardware business, because you're still selling boxes to these. You can find also IT services like storage clouds. Yeah? It's usually cheap storage, which you are serving to lots of consumers. For enterprise purposes, serving cloud with enterprise requirements on availability, on reliability, there are not much offers out there. And analysts have problems to really classify the cloud, because it's a services-oriented business. The business model is different. You cannot count boxes. You know, you cannot count storage revenue. It's pretty much a different market. It's not a storage market, even though the technology underneath is pretty much the same. You know? That's that's a question mark for storage analysts. And let's add the next view, adding more server-centric people. Yeah? What you find is they have something to offer for the more lower end, and I'm usually speaking just about businesses. You also have the end consumer devices for people who like DSL routers, yeah, and having some NAS attached there. You can go down to very small devices here, but it's just servers which you typically have in this segment. You don't sell specialized boxes in these areas. Also, cloud looks much more mature in this segment, yeah, with servers, because they're also selling a lot of software on top of it. They're selling compute services, and you also need storage services for storing the data that you have computed. But I think from the analyst point of view, the cloud is more oriented on compute than on storage. Yeah? Server people know much more about it, have a better understanding, have assessed the market already better. Even though it's still a different market because server people are also selling hardware. Okay, and what is also important, in each of these segments you can find different people. And there are much more different kinds of people we can talk about in this hour. But let's make a poll for different kind of people, what they really think. And don't take it too serious. Some of these statements I really heard from people, some of more trying to spell out what they think. Yeah? If you ask a classical storage block person, block storage person, he really thinks a large portion of storage is still block because he sells these devices, he has a good market share. Yeah? It's all block, what you really find in the market. Yeah? File. That's the new stuff. We have heard it's already dead, but for block person, it's new stuff. Yeah? And he doesn't really recognize that there's so much file around because he's not looking on the server where the file system is created. Yeah? His box serves block storage to the server and the file system is created there. And even if analysts forecast that file gets the dominant player for block versus block. Yeah? In the past years, you find a lot of analysts saying that's the trend. Block is going down and file is growing. He experienced still a good growth in revenue for block storage. And this growth doesn't come from the enterprise segments. It comes from mid-range, and it's mainly driven by a lot of new businesses being created in emerging countries. So if you look for your business opportunity, these are these new countries, India, China, Brazil. So the growth countries where lots of new businesses are created, where lots of growth is happening, they have a big demand of storage, and typically they buy block boxes. Also, if you look into the box, what these people are saying is that we have microcode in there. We don't have software, we have microcode. Microcode is a very interesting word, and it's hard to find a definition somewhere. I would say from a storage perspective, a good definition is, do you want to control the I/O path through your code, not leaving this to the operating system, just using the operating system as some kickstart module, and then your microcode grabs everything. And if you look on process scheduling, but also especially for the I/O path, I think that's a good indicator that you are having microcode thinking people in front of you. Yeah? And they really want to have this in their hands, want to design everything by their own, because they don't trust something like an operating system. Yeah? They want to have a reliability which are defined by themselves and trust only code that they have written by themselves. They also have this thinking that servers are the easy side of the world. Yeah? What does this mean? How do you reboot your storage? Storage is a stateful system. Even if you turn off the power, yeah, you still have your data stored in there. And you need methods to protect this data, disaster recovery, backup, and all this kind of stuff for procedures to protect the state. For the servers, you can just, if you have a problem, just reboot, and the problem is away, hopefully, once the applications are up and running. So storage is a much more complicated thing if you think from a block storage person perspective. The next perspective are the NAS people who create NAS boxes. They figure out nearly all storage is consumed as file today. You know, I'm shipping file, I'm having a really good portion of business. The analysts are saying my business is growing. And if you compete with a file system on a server, my NAS box provides the best and fastest implementation. If you want to do a real good file, you should buy a NAS box. The protocols you are using, and you know this much better than I, you need to handle user directories, access rights, you need to deal with logs, with so many additional things compared to block protocols, it's far more complex than the prod protocols. That's what the people think. The block people will say, no, block protocols have the same level of complexity. There's much more in it you have to recognize. You don't know about that. But NAS people will say NAS protocols are far more complex. I personally believe this is true, but it's just a perspective. File performance is critical and complex. If you compare it with optimizing performance on a block device, you just have to deal with the same segment size. It's much more easy. Every block is equal. For file, you have metadata, you have lots of parameters where you can influence the performance. You need to understand much more of the access patterns, how the box is being used to optimize the performance. Newer versions of NAS protocols provide you with a reliability similar to block protocols. And I think this is what the newer NAS protocols are claiming, that you can really rely on them. They're much more reliable than the first versions. You can run databases on top of that. You can serve your IT shop out of NAS protocols with the newer versions. And this was some, in comparison to block protocols, looking 10 years ago, this was not the case. NAS people will claim, now you can trust us. Yeah? We are reliable enough that you can really do anything out of a box. And if you still need block protocols, we have some options for you. Yeah? You can serve this also out of a file box. You just put the protocols on top of it, and we can still serve you with block if you wish, if you really need it. But it's just options, because the underlying layer is the file system. Yeah? You don't have some block-specific stuff underneath. You attach the hard disks directly to the controllers, and on top of the controllers, the file system is running. There is no Xen or something like this in the middle, which the block people would think that needs to be there. That's the NAS perspective. A very different view is the tape perspective. Tape is dead since 20 years. It's a vital business. The tape people are selling much stuff, not well recognized, because it's mainly in the enterprise market or in mid-range where you find some tape libraries left. I think everyone who has still remember the good old cassette player remembers the unreliability of tape technology. But tape since then has matured much more. It's much more reliable. And people, if they want to store lots and lots of data, and looking on their power bill, they decide for tape, because this doesn't need power to store data. The enterprise tape, it's guarantees you, meanwhile, 30 years that your data persists on the media, which HDDs doesn't do in any way to come to this magnitude of duration. Also, the access time decreased a lot. You're speaking about something like 15 seconds average seek time, which is much more faster than what we recognize by typical tape. So that's why this business is still vital. If you look to performance, you can also buy virtual tape libraries to fulfill these requirements. And interesting, what they introduced in the past years is a file interface. They have standardized so-called linear tape file system, providing you with the same semantics a file system provides you. Which just enhances the interfaces so that you can put more workload, storage workload on top of a tape. That's the tape perspective. There are more than four, but this is the last one I want to spell out here, the storage software perspective. This person would say, at the end, everything is software. If you look in the boxes, you just find software, it's just put in the box. How much specialization do you really have in the hardware, which you really need today? The commercial off-the-shelf hardware provides you with good enough reliability for the majority of reliability requirements. You must have very specific requirements on reliability that you really need a specific box. Software, by the way, is also the better business. Once you have software developed, you have no manufacturing costs anymore for boxes. So your profit margin looks more attractive compared to boxes. If you ask the bean counters in your company, they like software. Because from the money perspective, it's really attractive and providing you with eliminating this burden of investments, of capital, and manufacturing costs, which you have to spend in hardware business. Software also usually provides you with new features more easily. You have better ways to ship new features by your releases. And if you're working in the industry, typically you always have customers desperately seeking for this or that feature. And you have much better reactions to them to adapt to their special requirements. The other side of the medal is that you have a much better model for this vendor lock-in scheme, meaning once your customer is using your software, it's much harder for them to move out. So that's compared to boxes. I mean, block storage claims interoperability, also the details, there are problems with interoperability there. But for software, it's much more, can be much more customized to special needs. And once you have your customer in your ecosystem, it's much harder for them to get out there. That's what storage software people think. So who is right? Who is having the right directions? At the end, it's a question of money, who wins? But I think it really depends on what makes success. There's more than one storage island, which we saw the picture at the beginning. All these arguments are valid. In their view, with their customers, with their perspective. What is changing is the landscape, what people are doing, how storage is consumed. And let's have a look into history. You all know this good old law of Moore, Mr. Moore, who said in the middle of the 60s, the transistors, which you can build into an integrated circuit, will increase and double each year by a factor of two. And he thought this is true for 10 years. Since then, many more years, we have seen this continuous growth of transistors in CPUs. A similar growth, and that's why I called Moore's law for storage, is for the capacity you can find on a single HDD. You see these trends here, it's pretty much linear. It's also something between 12 and 18 months, what you typically say for Moore's law, for the growth of capacity. It's true. What is different compared to transistors, to the original law of Mr. Moore, is that a lot of form factors died. All the big disks you can find, found in the 80s or in the 90s, 14-inch drives, 8-inch drives, 5.25-inch drives, they died. These form factors doesn't exist anymore. We have some form factors still very vital, 3.5, 2.5 form factor. In the lower end, and I think this was not so visible. There was a big replacement by flash technology, by flash memory. The vendors, hard disk vendors, who tried to create smaller 1-inch, 1 gigabyte drives, they started this, but this business wasn't really successful because flash memory was already good enough when they introduced their technology to fulfill most of the requirements, and most of the people decided to use USB sticks, SD cards, or just have flash being built inside your device. So there is an upper bound for the form factor, and there's also a lower bound, which we see if we look back the past 30 years for HDD form factors. If we look to the future on HDD, how this will look like, the technology outlook is still very good, that we have a continuous growth of capacity. There are new technologies like heat-assisted magnetic recording, the HAMR technology, which is introduced in the first drives. The outlook is that hard disk vendors can build a 100 terabyte drive in some years. They are able to build this on a technology level, I think up to 50 terabytes. But if we expect a continued growth, let's expect in some years to think about 100 terabyte hard disk drives. The limitation for mechanical parts is still the same. The average seek time at the beginning of the 90s was something around 10 to 15 milliseconds, and it's still there. You can find a little bit faster drives, but since 20 years we have the same limitation on mechanical parts. The changes that the capacity, meanwhile, is increased by a factor of 1,000. So the ratio of capacity versus I/O you can do per second increased by a factor of 1,000. The outlook is that there is no solution for that. The limitation will remain. You cannot make mechanical parts faster. Even some people saying it might slow down a little bit because it's newer, higher capacity technologies may take some more time to do the real positioning. It's a little bit more complicated to do the positioning. So let's consider we will not have seen any, or we will not see any change in the I/O per second for a single spindle. This means if you talk about RAID controllers, about a couple of disks, that the time to build, rebuild a RAID once a hard disk died, that will take longer and longer. It takes up to a few hours today. If we are increasing the capacity by a factor of 50 or 25, it may take not hours, but days, or even a full week at the end, if there's no change. And the problem with RAID rebuilds is, once you have lost your parity bit, you are under danger if you lose a second hard disk. Newer RAID levels allow to have a second failure, which gives you a little bit more relief, but just think that you run a full week with a RAID rebuild, and you have a potential another failure here with a, that can happen. And what you also see if you look in high volumes of hard disks, if you have a series of hard disks, they tend to fail at the same time. So the potential risk is even higher that you experience a data loss scenario with your RAID. So here you need to change something to adapt new RAID levels, new RAID technology, if you deal still with the same disk. What we see with flash memory, we saw that it grabs the smaller segments of devices. It also gets introduced as SSD storage, meanwhile, in the industry since some years now. And it actually introduces a new storage tier in large compute environments. These devices are very expensive still, but more and more people consider this as an option to speed up their what you can put as workload on your system. Also new workload like big analyzers of data takes more I/O to the data that you want to analyze. So it really makes sense to introduce this as a cache, which also means you need to adopt your storage software above that to deal with this new level of storage. Hybrid HDD, that's also in the press. Do you really need that in your laptop and PC? The laptop and PC market itself is under challenge. But just consider that you have a 100 terabyte hard disk with 1 terabyte of flash. What do you really need? Do you need this 100 terabyte of storage to carry with you? Or do you just need the 1 terabyte of flash in a few years? So hybrid, I think this is something we see in these years to get a relief for some limitations current devices have. But it's nothing that will last for long. Another, when we look back to the slide about HDD drives and seeing this big form factors dying, there's also some other pattern we can see in the market. And there was a professor, Mr. Christensen, from the Harvard University, who wrote a nice book, 1997, called Innovation's Dilemma. Yeah. This scenario looks like this. You have an established technology in your market, and you are a vendor of this technology. What you typically do is doing incremental innovations into that. You're improving your technology. You see this increase, like we see with the capacity of hard disk drives, as a continuous growth, and you're very well positioned. You have a good business model, a high profit business model. You're serving all the requirements from your market. What you are not seeing are technologies that are disruptive. And Mr. Christensen introduced this word to distinguish evolutionary and disruptive innovations, where disruptive innovations are those that change the whole market. Yeah? Also saying, not changing just the whole market, but let a lot of companies dying. And he spotted out for these big HDDs in the 70s and 80s, once the industry moved from one form factor to the next one, always a lot of companies died. There were more than 60 vendors of hard disk drives at the beginning, and just count the number of hard disk vendors we have today, how many are left. Yeah? What happened is that typically this disruptive innovation started at the low end in another market. It's not recognized by yourself because you're focused on your market. Also, this technology is evolving by incremental improvements. And for a long time, this technology matures, and at a very certain point in time, it gets good enough to fulfill the majority of requirements of the market where you are in as the established technology vendor. So now you have a competitor which typically costs less price, which has usually also other business model. Mr. Christensen said it's lower profit business but higher volume. So just consider a vendor operating with 60% profit margin and you encounter a competitor that just needs 40. Then you have problems. And even though if you have people in your company when you are selling the established technology telling here's something new, this innovator saying that's the dilemma of the innovator, you have no arguments for the change because the business model is working. The bean counters are very lucky with your business model, with the profit margin. Why should I invest in this low-end sector? That's very hard to go this step to something less profitable and being observed as not sufficient for your market. And that's also what your customers are saying. It's not good enough for us. They are saying this as long as the disruptive innovation gets good enough. And then you're just asking for, why don't you have the other one? And then the time is very rapidly going on. There's only a very short time left where you can adopt to this change. And that's why a lot of companies died, because they were not able to adopt to this change in the market. So this turning point, it looks linear from the trends. If you look to the market share, Yeah, it's not linear, it's very disruptive. So the established vendor has all the market share, you know, till the turning point. And then the new technology gets into the new market in 2 or 3 years. And Mr. Christian chose especially the HSD storage industry because this industry has so rapid innovation cycles. You know? You can figure out this pattern on how the market is changing much better when you have high frequency industries innovating and delivering devices each 6 months or 9 months. You know, there are other industries which are on a much slower innovation path. We can observe these patterns as well. But he chose the hard disk market especially for this purpose because it's so visible afterwards. You know? If the people would have seen this at the beginning in the established technology, maybe they had seen this differently. And you can also recognize change if you hear two words. For instance, if you compare flash memory, yeah, memory is a memory market. Yeah, you put this somewhere inside, yeah, you don't build boxes out of these, to SSD storage. Now it's relevant for the storage market itself because the word itself appears into the term. Yeah. I think this is very good to see. The question is, what are disruptions in the storage industry? And let's have a look. In the past 40 years, I selected just a few innovations which were introduced. A lot of innovations were happening. We all know this. The IT industry is one of the most vital industries with most innovations. But disruptions happen 10 to 20 times less than incremental innovation. So it's very hard to spot out these. Ethernet is definitely a technology introduced at the beginning of the 60s, which changed a lot in the 90s, yeah? So 20 years later. A lot of companies were running with the old model till the beginning of the 90s, and then we introduced the internet, and much more people were adopting to these, and a lot of change happened. SCSI, I think, is also a lot of change, because you changed from the direct attached storage to a bus model with initiator and target, a much more distributed model. Yeah? For the technology, it changed a lot, and it combined with the RAID technology, you were able to build dedicated RAID controllers. Yeah? So these mid-range market were created, mid-range block storage market were combined out of the SCSI protocol, which led into the fiber channel protocol later on for fiber channel, when you put this on the fiber, together with the RAID concept, you had created a new market, you know, which took a lot of market share of the existing storage market at these days. NAS also changed a lot. We see just the market share of NAS boxes, yeah, in the market, how much they have grabbed in the past 20 years. SAN, I wouldn't call this, yeah, if you spot this out, SAN, Storage Area Network, I wouldn't call it disruptive. I would say it was more a reaction of the storage industry to create a network which is higher cost, which was built explicitly for storage requirements. So we have lots of arguments to sell it to people. Yeah, but it was more reacted, which was created by the same companies that sold these devices already. It was in that market, happening in that market. Yeah? But it's very hard to spot out through all of these what is really disruptive, and I think that's a big question. There's no yellow box here for the past 10 years. What can really change something in the next years? But I think there's a lot of change possible, and John gave a wonderful introduction here, what might happening. I think you can only spot this out if you try to look how the market evolves, yeah? How the overall market evolves. And I mean, you cannot put everything into one slide describing the whole world. I selected some areas of the market which should be relevant for storage thinking people. Yeah? On the top side, I called this the business side. Yeah? You find small businesses, medium businesses, enterprise businesses, which are the classical method to distinguish by the size of the company. Yeah? A lot of business is also generated by high-performance computing. There are a lot of new companies being created just using high-performance computing and using, for instance, genetic analysis is a wonderful new market, yeah, where people use tremendously big amount of data and compute work. Yeah? And there are lots of other stuff. And it's very related to what we find in the internet, you know, of the internet companies which appeared in the past 15 years, and also this, I call it large cloud, because it's not just a small cloud sitting somewhere. The business model is around economy of scale in a large cloud, yeah, where you put and plug together lots of hardware, and you have the ability to just add in the next 1,000 servers to your shop. Yeah? There you have economy of scale. It's just a selection of businesses, business areas, but I think that's really relevant. On the lower hand side, you see the personal computer and laptop. That's where you are still using HDDs in. The others, they are not seen by storage thinking people. Why should you care about smartphones and laptops, yeah? Or even going into smaller sizes when the devices really disappear and a couple of people are saying these will become the so-called cyber-physical world, or people talk about cyber-physical homes and other environments where the intelligence is and the devices are built in your car, built in your house, built in your office, and you're just communicating with these devices. Yeah? And today you're just jumping before your Kinect and doing nice dances. Yeah? That's, I think, the beginning of it, that you don't have to take something with you to control the IT behind it. But this is going more and more forward, you know, that intelligence is built in. And at the end, everywhere, there are lots of people on this planet which are still unconnected. Yeah? I think there are 1 or 2 billion having really access to the internet. The rest is still unconnected. If you are able to offer them services, yeah, and just think of people in Africa who can start to communicate talking about market prices between their cities. Yeah? These are scenarios which can change a lot for these people. Yeah? Also giving that much more income and wealth in these areas. So change happens when these markets get connected. Like we see, we connect smartphones with a large cloud. That's how these areas are created. Yeah? You can use, and these are the factors that come from the outside. On the left-hand lower-end corner, this smart office, the app of the day, yeah, which you download. It's much too small. Megabytes which you need to download on your smartphone, but it can change a lot. I recommend now, if you have to commute all the day, a wonderful introduction was done by Google saying how many minutes I need to move from my home to my work. That's wonderful, perfect. Yeah? Exactly the information you're looking for. Not where the traffic jam is exactly, but how many time I need to go to work. Intelligent providers, a lot of providers like power providers are looking to how to get into the homes, yeah? Figuring out what is happening there, how much power the home is really using. And we just have a project running where an energy provider wants to have software being installed on DSL routers to do smart metering for the energy the houses are consuming, because this box is already there and it's much easier for them to get on an existing ecosystem with DSL routers, which most of the houses have already, than creating a new ecosystem. And this is definitely a platform, yeah? If DSL providers of DSL routers think that's a vital business model. What should I put in addition on this box? Is it relevant if you serve power, water, or whatever you want to measure for a house and have one point of control there? And the data you're collecting, you can use this also for more intelligence, like seeing how much energy is consumed in a country. Yeah? How much energy do I have to provide? You might know in Germany, we are getting more and more into this new forms of energy creation, which are called green technologies. Yeah? But they are also very dependent on how much wind is blowing, how much sun is shining. So you need a much more intelligent systems to interact with the consumers. So you need also connections here. Yeah? Smart traffic is a different area. How can you control the traffic in a way with all this growing traffic in the big cities? This is what comes from the consumer side. From the business side, the change, a lot of change is coming through the growing economies. Just looking on the right-hand side now, emerging countries, which are coming more and more to also developed countries, evolving more and more. Lots of businesses are creating there, lots of growth. And this is especially relevant, what we have heard at the beginning, for people who still sell disc boxes, selling this into emerging countries. Yeah? It would be a danger if this becomes not true for them. Yeah? Analytics and big data, that's also a lot of change, a lot of new abilities. To analyze data, how people buy their goods in a store, yeah? Optimize the placement of things, analyze lots of data you were not able to analyze before. And a lot of this change is driven by this HPC guys. Yeah, they deal with very large IT environments. They really try or have the requirements for dealing with, just looking on the top places, 500,000 cores working together. They are building storage areas of more than 100,000 disks, where you have the requirement that some disks are always dead. Yeah, you have to deal with that. Cannot use classical RAID technology there. So a lot of innovation is change is also created in that area. And for large cloud or the internet, I think a big change is driven by virtualizing, you know, putting more and more things into virtualizing software, whether it's virtual images or it's virtualization technologies for storage, that you're not depending on a one-to-one relationship, but working more in a peer-to-peer model, that all your compute servers in the large cloud, when you have thousands or hundred thousands of servers, and you want to have them working, you must organize them, and you cannot depend and manage individual connections between anymore. You must create a software stack which is completely virtualized, which is also lots of innovation here and changing the model, yeah, and how things are being operated. And as I said, here it's really a matter of scale, yeah, scale of the economy to build such big things. So these are potential changes, and I don't have trends for you, yeah? Because trends, if you believe the analysts, it's very hard to predict. Usually people think in linear ways, they don't see these disruptions. So let's talk more about questions. Questions in area where change can happen. If you have a good answer as a person, yeah, working in these different segments, if you already have a good answer for these questions, you are positioned very well. If you don't have answers, you need to start thinking. Yeah. One term I spotted out recently is peak disk. Do we have reached peak disk? If you count the number of hard disk drives being sold each year, we saw in 2010 to 2011, something like a stabilization. Formerly, there was always growth in the number of disks. 2012 looks like declining. It can also have something to do with this disaster in Thailand, that companies were affected by the ability to build hard disk drives. But a lot of people are convinced that the number of hard disks is shrinking. Yeah? And it shrinks because segments are breaking in the PC area and the laptop area. There are less being sold. We may observe more disruptions here. but more and more people think flash memory or SSDs are good enough. It depends on how many time you really need in these big shops, yeah? How many hard disks you need there, moving data from your consumer end device into the cloud. Yeah? What is the balance here? Because in the cloud, you can much better do compression, you can much better do eliminate redundancy in the data. You know, technologies people have already developed who are within this business, doing the storage in this cloud. Yeah? And the other danger is flash storage. You know, how much storage will be replaced by SSD card for creating the new growth of analyzing engines for big data analysis? What type of storage do we really need there? Yeah? So for hard disk vendors, I think this is really challenging. For the classical box kind of thinking people, the question is, when do cloud services become good enough to replace the majority of IT equipment from small and medium businesses? Yeah? You see some indications that some applications like your calendar or email is moving into the cloud. Would you put your HR system into the cloud? Maybe. Yeah. Do you put everything and trust the cloud? I think we are not there yet. But the time till this is coming, maybe not so far away. And just think, it just takes a few years that your customers that have always bought your box, yeah, and are wonderful and happy think, no, cloud is good enough, I go to the other shop and just buy IT service by the cloud. Yeah? And the problem here is, I mean, you still need boxes, but you need them in the cloud. So you just get to the vendor that is just providing the commodities to the cloud. The real profit is being made by the people who own the cloud. Yeah? You're just the vendor who needs to ship the boxes into there. Yeah? That's, I think, really a danger. And another danger for people who consider RAID controllers as the best you have ever seen. I think, especially for storage box kind of thinking, people in large clouds, you will see much more technologies, RAID technologies. You heard you must do something with RAID. Yeah? At the current RAID concepts doesn't work anymore. This can be much more implemented easily in storage software. Yeah? Talking about peer-to-peer concepts between different kinds of servers. What changes are implied by introducing cyber-physical systems and getting more and more people connected? I think that's the biggest question. If have really everybody connected on the planet, it's hard to answer. Yeah? Maybe it's already taking some time till we are getting there. But for people thinking about new businesses, I think that's very, very good opportunities are lying there. And the last question goes to the audience. How does Samba fit into this landscape, into this changing landscape? I don't have the answer for you. I just showed you some questions here. And you have two wonderful days of talking and thinking about it. So let's take the opportunity to discuss it. Taking the time and hopefully also talk about other topics, but maybe this gives you some ideas of what might be relevant to think about. And as my last sentence, I would say it's difficult to make predictions, especially about the future. I'm not the first one saying this. I'm just citing here a few authors, well-known people like Niels Bohr or Groucho Marx, who seem to have said this already. Yeah? So thank you for your patience, and hopefully we also have some questions about that.
Thank you, Jens-Peter Ackelbein. We are running, I gave him 5 more minutes because he started late. If there are questions or comments, maybe we could keep it short, just maybe 1 or 2. I see one here already.
I really enjoyed your presentation.
Thank you.
It has been said that storage has caught up with the cloud, and the cloud has caught up with us all. Mm-hmm. But more than that, politics has caught up with everything. Would you mind commenting on that?
I didn't get your question directly, so maybe you can...
What is the influence, the impact of politics on storage and the future of it?
Politics by the politicians or politics in the storage people themselves?
Across the spectrum of competitors in the marketplace, consumers using it, and politicians trying to cash in on it.
I think a lot of these markets, and that's why I showed this island picture, is driven by politics. People are drawing their claim, building their ecosystem, and the bigger the company is, the more influence they have, the more influence they have on customers and clients. People are believing that. So I think that's one of the biggest resistance points, why change is not happening as fast as technical people typically think it can happen.
Just one comment, hopefully answering the comment you had about where does Samba fit into this. Mm-hmm. I'm based in Silicon Valley, and I talk to a lot of OEMs who are using Samba, and one of the most common new uses of Samba that I'm seeing, actually, that fits very well with this is cloud storage gateways. Mm. Mm. Yeah. So right now, and I don't know how long this is going to last, but I'm willing to take whatever I can get. People are, a lot of the cloud storage vendors, they have a problem that people have a lot of local storage. They want to migrate it into the cloud. And Samba, because it's so hackable for them, is an ideal solution that they can provide what appears to be local file storage that's back-ended into the cloud and allow people to migrate the data in there. So yeah. I think that's where we're going to live at least for the next few years.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you see the synergy in the cloud, having thousands of servers being sitting there, you need a software that can talk between all these servers. Yeah? You need to follow this virtualization concepts that are already getting into various spectrum of the complete software stack. And Samba, I think, needs to fit them very well. And a lot of storage is consumed in file protocols. Don't believe always in block object protocols.